Okay, welcome once again to another Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast. And I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith, and I'm here with my great audio engineer as well. And we are in the midst of a long-running special edition. Isn't that correct? Yes, long-running special edition. The title of it is Think Like a Fighter Pilot. And why are we doing that? Because I guess, you know, when I'm thinking about this, I do a lot of thinking about it. It does occur to me that if one is going to be successful in life, whether it's being a fighter pilot or a small business owner or chief executive, or the list goes on and on. If you're going to be successful in life, you have to be able to think critically, right? That basically is the bottom line. If you wanted to put this in a nutshell, if you wanted to say, okay, Kevin, give me the bottom line of everything that you are doing, everything that you are about, what are you trying to say? What I'm trying to say is that the first thing, the first order of business, the means by which we can become successful and remain successful in life is through the process of critical thinking. And that's it. All right. So Throttle Up Radio is all about critical thinking and the various aspects of that. We do also mention in the process, we mention things like complex problem solving and innovation and creativity, to name a couple of key aspects of critical thinking. But it all centers around critical thinking. All right, so we can say, you can also say, okay, what is it? What do I need to do? Well, you need to think critically. What do I need to do? All right, well, I need to think critically as well. All right, so we all need to approach life through the lens of critical thinking, and I might add to that complex problem solving. Let me go one step further, and I know I may be going out on a limb a little bit, but that's okay. We are outside the box. We are always outside the box, and we are comfortable being outside the box. I will add one other thing. Right. Within the context of human consciousness and our ability to think critically, there is a key aspect that we should never, ever lose sight of, which is our moral compass. We should never lose sight of that. And that applies to warfighters. We're going to get into that a lot today. But that applies to the warfighting community. We should never, ever lose our moral compass, ignore it, throw it away. We should keep it. We should keep it in our breast pocket. And just you know, make that part of who we are. I think that defines who we are as Americans. Americans have pride themselves on and have never lost their moral compass. And if you want to know what that looks like in real life, you can study the Nuremberg trials. Go ahead and do that. Now, let's get on with the show. All right, so I'm going to have my great audio engineer read me the quick question, and then we will proceed with this week's show.
Hello, Kevin, and hello to your listening audience. So I think you took a trip last weekend, and you attended Tailhook, the 67th Annual Convention of Tailhook. So why don't you tell us all about it?
Okay, yes, I would be happy to. Tailhook is an important part of the lives of naval aviators, and the Tailhook Association is a place where active duty and retired naval aviators go every year. We go to this convention. It actually happens to be held in, did I say that right? Happens to be held in Reno, Nevada. Reno is a great city. By the way, it's up against the Sierra Mountains and Sierra Nevada Mountains, to be precise. And we met my colleagues. That's where you meet your colleagues. We gather every year at Tailhook, and we have a great association, and we have a fabulous program. We have is it called a convention floor? You know, floor two, is that the name of it? So we have this, what would you say, this enormous convention floor where all the vendors are, and we're talking about, we're talking well over 100 vendors, you know, probably, you know, it was huge, huge. I mean, you really couldn't even get through it. I went to the floor and spent some quality time there myself, and I was not able to get to all of the vendors. One of them happens to be Martin Baker. I remember you remember the Martin Baker booth, right? You know, we're talking about the ejection seat, the improvements in ejection seat design and stuff like that. That was the ejection seat that was part of the airplane that I flew, which was the FA Crusader. I flew that for many years as a naval aviator and Navy fighter pilot. Okay, Tailhook. Now, there's three terms to consider here, all right? If you want to know it, what's going on in a nutshell, all right? There are three terms that I'm going to throw out here for consideration. And this is very easy to remember, okay? It's almost impossible to forget it. The three terms is this: Tailhook, Top Gun, and ACM. Okay, what does that mean? Tailhook is the annual convention. It's held every year. It's been going on for 67 years, by the way. And it honors all of those who have operated from the deck of a aircraft carrier. And that's a fairly substantial number of people if you look at it. Aircraft carriers have been around in this country for 100 years. Actually, it's 101 now, because in 2022 it was a 100-year anniversary of the aircraft carrier. So the aircraft carrier has been around for a little over 100 years, and in that process, a lot of folks have operated from the flight deck of an aircraft carrier operating at the tip of the spear. Okay, so the carrier is a forward-deployed combat operation. The squadrons aboard the aircraft carrier are forward-deployed combat units. That's probably and arguably and almost certainly within the context of what's going on in the world, that's probably the most important place that one could be with respect to national defense, okay, or with respect to this nation. We say one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. We say that. And a way we can preserve that and continue to make that assertion real is for people to, some people, we call them warriors, by the way, so the warrior class. And all nations have a warrior class, whether you know it or not, and I know that all of you do. Okay, but the warrior class that is operating at the tip of the spear includes, but not limited to, but does include those who are aboard the aircraft carriers of the United States of America. Okay. And they travel all over the world. I have been aboard and I have traveled all over the world on aircraft carriers. I was the commander of a forward deployed combat unit embarked aboard the USS Constellation, which happens to be within the first group of super carriers. We call them super carriers because they were significantly large, if that's such a term. They were big. They were big ships, 60,000 tons, I think, and upwards of that, I would say between 60 and 90,000 tons of fighting steel, and that represents the bulk of the aircraft carriers and the carrier task force. Now, keep in mind that when we deploy, it doesn't matter where we're going. It doesn't matter what's going on in the world. Whenever a carrier deploys, it deploys as a carrier task force. All right, so this carrier task force, we call it CTF. I was part of Carrier Task Force 77. What does that mean? That means, well, we call it CTF 77 for short. That means that it was part of the 7th Fleet, 7 being the 7th. Fleet. All right, so we came under the commander of the 7th Fleet, and then the chain of command went from there to a couple of steps. There's only a couple of steps to the President of the United States from that position. So we were at the tip of the spear operating, and tailhook is a convention that speaks to that and brings in guest speakers. Often they are still on active duty, senior naval aviators and senior officers come in and talk to us and put on presentations and discussions and stuff like that. So it kind of brings us up to speed, what's going on in the world, what's going on with naval aviation, what's going on with the military, all kinds of things. So it was great. Keep those three things in mind: tailhook, Top Gun, and ACM. What is ACM? Air combat maneuvering. All right. So those are the three big items. All right. So you can say those are the mountain peaks. If you're looking at the landscape, which I like to do, all right, the big picture. We're looking out there at the landscape. What do we see? We see three mountain peaks. And what are they? All right, so within the context of aerial combat, the three mountain peaks are tailhook, Top Gun, and air combat maneuvering, all right, ACM. Specifically, tailhook deals with operating from the deck of an aircraft carrier. Top Gun deals with aerial combat. It's primarily, primarily focused on, not exclusively, but primarily focused on the airborne battle space. All right, that's what Top Gun deals with. Top Gun deals with what is happening in the air, the airborne battle space. And ACM is what we call close-in air combat. Now, within the airborne battle space, keep this in mind. There are two forms of combat. We have broken it down into two. It's not exactly as accurate as perhaps it could be, but nevertheless, we in the fighter community have broken it down into two areas or two arenas. The first one is long-range aerial combat, and the second one is close-in aerial combat. Right. Top Gun is primarily but not exclusively focused on close-in aerial combat. Top Gun also deals with other things as well, but It does, in fact, deal with close-in aerial combat. So that is one of the things, one of the warfighting specialties that it focuses on. Now, here's something that I'm going to throw out here, and I'm going to use it as a discussion point, as a point by which we can continue our discussion, our inquiry, our thinking within the context of something or other, and I'm going to put it in a context. This is my way of dealing with it conceptually. Okay, now we talked a lot about conceptualization in previous shows, so just keep that in mind. Conceptually, what we're dealing with here is complex problem solving within the airborne battle space. All right, now I'm going to say that again because this is pretty important from a critical thinking standpoint. All right, so critical thinking and complex problem solving. We're going to look at things because we are dealing with time compression. We are going to consider things conceptually, the conceptual construct of reality. What exactly is it? All right, so conceptually, what all of this is dealing with, we look at Top Gun, we look at Tailhook, we look at ACM, we look at all kinds of things. We look at airborne missiles, we look at airborne guns, we look at this or that. What are we dealing with? We're dealing with complex problem solving within the airborne battle space. That's why we conduct these exercises that that occur. Now, as part of this year's Tailhook convention that I went to, it was actually recently, it was actually last week. All right, so I just returned from Reno. I flew in and I flew out of Reno. As part of the Tailhook convention this year, we had the opportunity and I exercised my opportunity to go visit the Naval Aviation Warfighting Development Center. Okay. It goes by the acronym NAUDIC. All right. Now let me say it again. It's the Naval Aviation Warfighting Development Center, or that's where advanced warfighting skills are experienced or are developed. Okay. So we can say, okay, so you're a airborne warrior. You go to the warfighting development center to learn the latest skill sets that are necessary to achieve mission success within the airborne battle space, operating against near peer adversaries. Now, I want to point out something that is probably very likely the most important thing that I'm going to say in all of these radio shows that I'm doing in Throttle Up. This is probably the most important thing I'm going to say, which is this: this nation, its military, naval aviation in particular, has now returned to the high end of the conflict spectrum. Okay, I'm going to say that again. We have, after a long period of time, we have returned. Naval aviation has, and this is, I'm certain that this is true of the Air Force, and as well, when I say naval aviation, I'm also thinking about the Marine Corps because they're closely aligned with Naval Aviation, Marine Corps Aviation, and as well as Army Aviation. Okay, I'm going to look at the whole thing, but obviously I'm focusing on Naval Aviation because that's my background. Okay, so Naval Aviation has now returned to training for operating within the context of the high end of the conflict spectrum. What exactly does that mean? That means that we are preparing for, we are training for engagement with a near peer adversary, an adversary that has modern ground and air equipment, weapon systems, modern weapon systems, modern communication systems, modern navigation systems, modern ISR systems, and the list goes on. Okay, a modern enemy. Okay, we are preparing for battle against a modern equipped military that is our adversary. We are preparing for that. Okay. What does that do? Well, it ratchets up the complexity, uncertainty, and criticality of the airborne battle space. Now, we are now operating in the high end, which basically means that we have to bring into maybe I should say it this way, we have to develop capabilities that had not been necessary when we were engaged in combat operations in recent times. Okay, we were operating against a relatively primitive foe that didn't actually have any air power to speak of. Okay, so we have left that that battle space, and we are now within the context of an airborne battle space that represents the high end of the conflict spectrum, which basically means that we need to be on our A game. We need to be the best that we could possibly be, and we need to prepare for battle against an enemy who is as well equipped as we are, and the deciding factor, the means by which we are going to succeed in combat, is we have to be better, significantly better than our enemy, within the context of complex problem solving within the airborne battle space. We have to be better at that. All right, so our problem solving skills, and we're talking about real time now. All right, so we're talking about real time battle space problem solving skills. We have to be better at it than our enemy. Okay, that's the whole point. Okay, so when I was there, going through the Naval Aviation Warfighting Development Center at Naval Air Station Fallon last week, that's all they talked about. They talked about preparing for battle against a near-peer adversary operating at the high end of the conflict spectrum. And that's what we are doing. So I was very impressed at what they are doing at that facility that has far-reaching results, far-reaching implications across across well across the naval aviation and beyond that as well. Okay. Now, having said that, I will say that the United States Air Force is doing a similar thing. I don't have the particulars and the details because I don't come from that community, but respectfully, I'm going to say that the Air Force has essentially the same thing going and has recognized the need to do this kind of warfare training and preparation as well as the folks on the naval aviation side. Okay. So, we are training to perform and win at the high end of the conflict spectrum. All right, that's going on right now. Okay. What does that mean? Okay. And let me just add a couple of more things as we enter into the battle space. All right, so we are now, you can picture this. All right, so we are now entering the airborne battle space. Okay. And we know from many sources, we know that the enemy is a modern enemy. It has modern equipment. It is committed to achieving mission success. It is just as motivated as we are. All right, so we have a near-peer adversary. How do we achieve the advantage in that particular situation where there is a relatively even match against warfighting components? A relatively even match. How do we achieve and sustain mission success? How do we achieve the advantage and be successful in combat? How do we win, basically? How do we win? Well, we win not because our technology is better, although we need to have good, solid technology that's reliable on the battlefield, certainly. But we don't win because of that. We win because we have brought with us the intellectual or the cognitive ability that is significantly better prepared to win on the battlefield. What is that? Well, that's what is that's the big difference, right? What is the force multiplier? What is the difference here between combat forces, between us and our enemies? What is the distance? The difference is that which resides within the human intellect. Okay. Is there an intellectual difference between us and our enemies? Well, there better be. Okay, there better be an intellectual difference between us and our enemies. What is that? Well, we've talked about that for a long, long period of time here on this radio show and podcast, and I would go on to say that, yeah, we have to be, first and foremost, we have to be better at critical thinking, we have to be better at complex problem solving, and we have to be better at real-time innovation. Okay? We just have to be better at it. You know, we have to look at the situation and assess it realistically, situation awareness, by the way, and we talked about this at great length, we have to be able to project, okay? First and foremost, we have to perceive or acquire, we have to perceive what's going on, we have to comprehend it effectively. So effective comprehension, this is all part of Micah Ensley's situation awareness model, by the way. And then the third thing the third part of this model, or the third functional area contained within the situation awareness model developed by Dr. Ensley, is projection. Okay? We cannot project in the literal. We have to project conceptually. Okay, so we have to be great conceptual thinkers. We have to reason on the conceptual plane. Okay, what does that mean? It means that we are better equipped intellectually to conduct modern warfare, to perform complex problem solving within the airborne battle space. We are better at it than our enemies, and we better be. Okay, that's the whole idea of preparing for battle. Sure, we have to know how to pull the trigger. We have to know what is going on with our missile systems and our guns, and we have to know what's going on with our airborne radar systems and electronic warfare systems and all of that, and the list goes on and on and on and on, not least of which is, where is the tanker? I mean, when I was out there, tip of the spear, I kind of wanted to know where the tanker was in case I got low on gas. Okay, where is the airborne tanker? You know, that was kind of like pretty important for me. All of that stuff. Have to know all of that stuff. But the bottom line is this. I had to be able to think better than the enemy. I had to have, within the context of what occupies my mind space, within the context of what I do intellectually, I have to be better at it. I have to be quicker. I have to be more precise. I have to be more accurate in the area of thinking and reasoning. Okay? Now, it goes by a lot of terms. Okay? Unfortunately, we don't really have anything that is precisely accurate, but it goes by a lot of terms. First and foremost, we can say, okay, what is it? What is human consciousness anyway, and how does human consciousness deal with the situation in which we are sentient beings? I call it sentient consciousness or human consciousness, and then from there we go into comprehension. Okay, so we are aware, we perceive, and then we comprehend what's going on, and we begin to construct a model of reality of what's happening in the here and now. Okay, but that's not as important as what will happen in the future at some point in time. That's the most important thing, all right? So how do we do that? All right, so we have consciousness, we have comprehension, and then we have conceptualization. And that's the key. Okay, that's the key to mission success, by the way. And I know you probably think, many of you think that I've lost my mind, but I haven't. So stick with me, because I've tried this out in the cockpit and I know it works. The third order of business is conceptualization. Why is that so important? Because you cannot project literally. You have to project conceptually. You have to say, okay, within the context of what's going on in the here and now, can I accurately predict a future situation from a set of current events? And I'll say that again for emphasis. Can I accurately predict a future situation from a set of current events? If the answer is yes, I can do that, and I am highly accurate in doing so, then I will almost certainly be better than any enemy that I would encounter. Okay? Why is that? Well, That's a great question, and I'm not entirely sure I have the correct answer. Right? In all aspects of reality, I'm not entirely sure I have the answer. I'm going to try to figure it out. Why are we better? Why is the American warriors better at it? You know, I could say that maybe we could look at it in terms of why were the Comanche warriors so good? Okay, what was the difference between the Comanche warriors and all other Indian tribes on the Great Plains? Why were they so good, right? So if we have that answer, then we can begin to answer, why are the American warriors so good? My position is this, right? The American warrior is so good in the form, and I'll give you some examples of that, all right? So I will give you the example of Captain Frank Ault, okay? Why was he so good? Why was Wade McCluskey so good in the Battle of Midway? Why was Jimmy Thatch so good in the Battle of the Philippine Sea? Why were they superior intellectually than the enemy was? Okay, I would say that's what America produces. America produces that kind of that kind of capability. America produces that kind of a warrior, all right, which is distinctly different than all other warrior groups on planet Earth. All right, now that's a big statement, and I know you're going to say that Kevin has probably lost his mind, and certainly if you want to say it, go ahead, but I'm going to stick with it. And the reason why I'm going to stick with it is because I have actually been out there at the tip of the spear. Okay, I've been out there at the tip of the spear. Some of the things I can't even talk about, but I have been out there at the tip of the spear, and I know what the enemy is capable of doing. I know what the enemy was capable of doing, and I know what the enemy is capable of doing now. Okay, and I think that we are superior in the intellectual domain than our enemies out there that occupy planet Earth. And so, what is that? What are these special qualities? And we talked about them, ongoing discussions we've had with this area that we've discussed on Throttle Up Radio Show and podcast. And by the way, this is one of the things I'm going to plug this show and this podcast again. You know, if you could carve out some quality time in your week to listen to at least part of this radio show and podcast, I would recommend that you do it. Right, I'm just kind of come right out there and say it. I recommend that you do so. You can find this on all the podcast platforms that we are aware of. It's a good place for you to go, and it remembers your place. So when you can listen to 10 minutes of it, stop. The next day you can listen to 10 minutes more and stop, and it just remembers where you are. All right, it's a great way to do it. I do it. Okay, I carve out time to do such a thing, not just my podcast, but others as well. Okay, so what we're going to do now, my audio engineer is informing me that we're going to play a audio clip, and this is going to be about 10 minutes. I'm not sure. It's going to be a portion of this full audio clip that happens to be available on YouTube, by the way, but it's about John Boyd and his air attack study, which deals with energy and maneuverability. And this is an example of what I'm talking about when I say we have to be better intellectually than our enemies. So John Boyd is going to be offering us some food for thought in this area. Let's go.
Greetings, this is Greg. I've been asked by some Patreon supporters to post a video about John Boyd's tactics and his energy maneuverability theory. John Boyd was a U.S. Air Force fighter pilot. He flew 22 missions in Korea, piloting the F-86 Sabre. He never once fired his guns in combat. After Korea, he became an instructor at the Air Force Weapons School, and this is where our story really begins. Boyd became known as 42nd Boyd because he had a standing bet that anyone could start behind him in a dogfight, and within 40 seconds he would reverse the situation and be behind his adversary. Apparently, no one ever collected on the bet. Boyd won every time. Prior to John Boyd, the Air Force and most fighter pilots felt that air-to-air combat was too complex and too fluid to be broken down into a series of moves and countermoves. Generally speaking, fighter pilots followed a loose set of tactics or rules, such as the dicta bulke, but nobody really had a move-by-move list for fighter pilots once they found themselves in a one-on-one fight. John Boyd changed that forever. He believed, and correctly so, that fighter planes operate within a world limited by physics, the airplane itself has limits, the pilots have limits, and there's a finite amount of space the plane operates in. Thus, at a given speed, an F-100 Super Sabre is going to be limited to some maximum turn rate or pitch angle. Even if it's going fast enough to pull up into the vertical, its time at that angle will be limited by the realities of thrust, weight, and gravity. Boyd spent a lot of his own off-duty time in 1959 and 1960 sitting at his typewriter and putting down the groundwork for what would become his aerial attack study. He had no budget, no official orders to do this, he just did it, and it became what was effectively the Bible of air-to-air combat for the U.S. Air Force, at least through the Vietnam War. Let's take a look at a paragraph in this book dealing with the thought that air-to-air combat is too complex to be codified. Pause if you want to read the actual text, but I'll summarize it. Boyd believes that the options in air-to-air combat are within a finite range and field of maneuvering, and knowledge of these limitations can be used to gain advantage over one's adversary. Here's the field of maneuvering Boyd described. The plane's field is limited by its turn rate, climb rate, and other factors. The elongated lower section is caused by the pull of gravity. Let's get into the actual maneuvers and countermaneuvers. We can't go over every single combo in Boyd's book, but we'll take a look at some of the common situations that he covers. A typical fighter attack is from nearly dead astern. This was typical in real life, and a review of in-game footage from online flight sims shows this is the most common type of kill in air-to-air combat, so it's where we'll start. All of this footage is courtesy of the iFly Central YouTube channel. I'll link the full videos in the description. So here we have a typical stern attack. Central's piloting an FW-190A8, and he's closing in on AP-38 Lightning. He's staying low 6 to remain in the Lightning pilot's blind spot, and most likely the Lightning pilot's not going to see him in time. This is a typical kill that you see in online multiplayer stuff. Once the 190's in range, unloads with everything he's got, and that's the end of that P-38. Again, this is a very typical type of kill in online multiplayer action. How should a defender counter the stern attack? Our knowledge of aircraft turn performance tells us that with two similar airplanes, the defending airplane, in this case, will be moving slower and thus will be able to turn more tightly. A sudden turn here by the defender, if tight enough and if timed correctly, would make it almost impossible for Central to get the shot because his faster moving plane won't be able to match the turn. So in most cases, the defender's first counter should be a hard brake turn, which Boyd calls a defensive turn. This is a defense against either a gun attack or a missile launch. It's important to note that depending on the attacker's position, it could be a turn with a vertical component or just a hard horizontal turn. Ideally, the defender wants to turn just hard enough to prevent the attacker's firing solution, but not any harder so as not to lose too much energy. Of course, for every move, there's a counter move, so let's look at the counter to the break turn. The most common counter for the break turn is the high-speed yo-yo. For this counter, once the defender starts his break turn, the attacker will turn outside of the defender's turn and climb. This does several things. First, it's hard for the defender to keep track of the attacker during this maneuver. If the defender loses situational awareness, he'll be at a severe disadvantage. Second, it allows the attacker to slow, thus preventing an overshoot and allowing for a tighter turn and retention of energy because of the vertical component. If timed correctly, the attacker will get a shot at the bottom of the yo-yo. Let's go back to a Central video to see this in action. Keep in mind the resolution on Central's channel is better than what you'll see here. Now, Central flies with a very strong crew. One of his squad mates will actually get some shots in on the target here before Central finishes him off. So what we see here is Central in an FW-190 rolling in and diving onto the rear quarter of an LA-5. And as he comes in, the LA-5 makes a pretty hard turn to the left, and Central's 190 cannot keep up with that. So he's going into a high yo-yo here. And as he's on the downhill side, one of his wingmen gets a shot in on the LA-5. Now the LA-5's low, slow, out of energy, and Central's in perfect firing position and finishes him off. So that's a very typical high yo-yo maneuver, counter to a hard break turn. That one went pretty well. They don't always go quite that smoothly. Among the top sim pilots in the IL-2 world, the high-speed yo-yo is a very common counter to the break turn. Not only do I see Central do this all the time in his videos, I see similar tactics from the Sheriff on the Sheriff SimShack YouTube channel. Interestingly, the Sheriff has his own particular version of this move, in which he elongates it out and retains energy and altitude longer before he comes back in for the attack. It's less aggressive, but safer. If he doesn't like what he sees, he just doesn't do the last half of the yo-yo. He just keeps on going. So, let's move on. What's the defender's counter for the high-speed yo-yo?
Okay, so that's a portion of this rather fascinating video on YouTube. The whole point of it is that John Boyd and his aerial attack study was addressing itself to what ultimately becomes energy management. And so the root of the problem, or another way of saying that, is that the way we can achieve, or better yet, the way we can solve a complex problem within the airborne battle space is that we have to be better at energy management than the enemy is. Okay, we just have to be better managers of energy. Now, okay, so can we reduce aerial combat to a set of discrete maneuvers? That's the problem before us. That was my problem when I was a Top Gun pilot and senior instructor pilot in the fighter community. That was my problem. That was the issue that I had to deal with. The answer is very, very hard to come by, but my answer is no, we cannot entirely reduce aerial combat to a set of maneuvers. We cannot entirely do that. We can use certain maneuvers under certain conditions successfully, but we have to be aware of something that is outside the box, which is innovation, which is battlefield innovation. In other words, let me give you a perfect example of this, right? And this video talked about the high yo-yo, right? Which basically means that we are converting energy from the horizontal plane to the vertical plane, back to the horizontal plane, and so forth and so on. That's what the high yo-yo is. But at some point in time, in the execution of that high yo-yo, it may require us to alter the maneuver. In other words, it may require us to go from a high yo-yo to a reverse barrel roll. How do you do that? You do that through the process of a battle space innovation. That's what you do. You're doing some serious projection into the future, and you're realizing that the position that you are in with respect to the execution of this particular maneuver, in which you are halfway through the maneuver, is actually not going to work. Okay, so you need to now change, and you need to go into a different aspect maneuver, a completely different aspect. Is it possible? Yes, it is possible. Is it hard to do? Yes, it is. Is it hard to teach? Yes, it is, but it simply has to be done. That's where your intellectual capacity comes into play. At what point do you change the maneuver? At what point? So as to maintain a higher energy state than the enemy. The bottom line here is energy management. Are we better energy managers than our near-peer adversaries? And I'm looking at my audio engineer, and she's giving me some hand signals. What was the hand signal you were giving me that we have?
It's time.
It's time. Okay. Now, the hand signal is that we are now at the end of another Throttle Up Radio show and podcast. And thank you for listening, and we will see you all next week.